You are listening to the Small Screen Podcast, part of the Invasion Radio Podcast Network. For pop culture and movie chat, check out the Popcast Podcast, and for insight on the hottest music, listen to the speaker box below. You can find all of the Invasion Radio podcasts at screeninvasion.com.
Hi, and welcome to the Small Screen Podcast, episode 45. I'm Crystal Bailey, your co-host. I write for screeninvasion.com, and I'm here with Marcos.
Hi, everyone. My name is Marcos Canales. You can read my blog, smallscreenhappenings.com, and I also write for thetelevixen.com and screeninvasion.com.
And this is the Small Screen Podcast, talking about all things TV, new, noteworthy, you know, what's on, what's happening. So let's dig into the news. And the big story this past week was the passing of a TV like legend, icon. He was a big deal. But Larry Hagman from Dallas passed away. I think he was like 81. Did you watch his like big show Dallas or any of his other TV works?
Obviously he was a little bit before my time. So I really didn't watch him on the original Dallas all that much or I Dream of Jeannie, but those two shows have cemented him in pop culture history. Because of how iconic those roles were and those shows were. So it was still sad for me that he passed away, even though I wasn't the biggest fan of his work. That being said, he was probably the best thing about the Dallas sequel that was airing on TNT. And I'm actually really interested to see how they're going to handle his passing, because it was renewed for a second season. And due to his condition, he wasn't as dominant of a presence this first season. So in some ways I can see them making a smooth transition. But again, he was such a big name for that show and so associated with it and that character that he's going to leave a massive void that I don't know if the new Dallas or TNT is going to be able to fill. I just hope that they are able to address it and handle it in a respectful way, which I'm sure they will. But I'm definitely intrigued to see if they're going to be able to pull that off.
You know, I hadn't even thought about the fact that that show was still on because I don't watch it. But I was sad to hear about his passing because I did watch I Dream of Jeannie. I mean, it was before my time, but Nick at Night, you know, brought it back and a lot of those other classic TV sitcoms. And so I remember watching it a lot and really enjoying his kind of uptight astronaut character against the, you know, genie who is making his life chaos and hijinks ensue and all that stuff. And, you know, it was classic TV. It was fun. And, you know, like you said, he was a big part of two major shows in, like, television history. So he will for sure be missed.
Definitely.
In other news, some casting changes have come to light in this past week. I really want to talk about the Mindy Project. They have let Amanda Seton, who played, I think that's how you pronounce her last name. She played one of the office girls. She's kind of the sexy one as compared to the other girl who was like the funny kind of quirky one. And she will be leaving the series. And Anna Camp, who plays Mindy's best friend, who's married with a kid, is going from a series regular to just a recurring character. And I completely agree with, like, I think both these decisions are good in the long run. Like, Amanda's character was pretty underused, and the last episode really let the other office assistant shine, and she was pretty funny. They just didn't really have enough for her to do for me to even like be sad that her character is going to be, you know, missing. I don't even know if it merits really like writing her out of the show. She might just be gone like one episode. But yeah, I mean, she like from the brief bit we saw, I thought she was pretty talented. So hopefully she ends up on another show, but I'm not, you know, sad to see that character go. And then for Anna Camp, apparently she requested to be bumped to a recurring character instead of series regular, so that way she could, you know, work on other projects while also working on Mindy Project. And given, you know, what we've seen from her character so far, it's probably a good move just because Anna Camp was a standout in Pitch Perfect this summer. So I'm sure she's gotten a lot of, like, offers and doors have opened for her because she's really funny and, like, she's also pretty and, like, she can play kind of the lead or she can play the funny sidekick. She kind of could do both of those, it seems. So, yeah, I think letting her pursue other opportunities is smart because she's really just not being able to highlight her talents as much on the show. I know you don't really watch Mindy Project that much. So do you have anything to add or thoughts on their casting?
Not much, but I do have a question. When did Anna Camp become a thing? Like, is it just because of Pitch Perfect? Because I don't think I'd ever heard her name before this news broke. Like, I knew she was on the show, and I remembered that character, but I didn't automatically think of the actress's name, and then it wasn't until I was looking up IMDb, like, just to get a background on her that she was in Pitch Perfect. And I was like, really? That was her? Like, but apparently people think that she's more talented than what this role dictates, which it sounds like you kind of agree with. But it, for me, at least, it felt like this uproar came out of nowhere.
I mean, she is great in Pitch Perfect. I thought she was really good in True Blood as well.
Another show I don't really watch. That's one.
Oh yeah, like she just plays crazy really well, which I guess those like funny crazy. That at least from what I've seen. Like she's also been in The Good Wife, which I don't watch, and she might have like more of a dramatic side from that. I just haven't been able to see, but. No, she was great in Pitch Perfect, and she was really strong in True Blood as, like, the Christian wife that, like, you know, sleeps with Jason because everybody sleeps with Jason, and she goes a little crazy because of, like, everything that happens with all the vampires and stuff that in that season. But, yeah, so I definitely think she was better than what they were giving her on the Mindy Project. So it'll be interesting to see where she goes.
And I will say that I was a little bit more disappointed about the news about Amanda Seton because the few episodes I did watch, I thought she was one of the standouts, even though it was clear that she was just a supporting character and didn't have that much to do in comparison to the others. And I think once the male nurse guy came on board, she became somewhat irrelevant. But I wasn't planning on going back anyway, but the fact that one of the few characters that I kind of liked is no longer going to be a part of the show is just another reason for me just to wash my hands of it. But like I said before, I mean, if the show has a creative resurgence and gets on track and becomes markedly better, then I'll be willing to give it another shot. But this definitely doesn't work in its favor.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still going to be watching, so if there's a sudden turnaround for the better, I will let you and all of our listeners know. Because while I don't think the show, you know, is great or even that good of a show, there are still elements in it that I enjoy. And, like, I find some of the jokes still, like, at least a few things in the show to like. So hopefully they can, like, as it progresses, get all of those pieces to add up more. To make a cohesive, enjoyable, good show.
Cool.
But yeah, and then there's other casting news, which all you Community fans out there probably care about. But if you want to go into the Community news.
So yeah, late last week, the news broke that Chevy Chase has officially left Community with, I think, only 2 episodes left to shoot for this upcoming season.
And probably last. Well,
that's the thing. We'll talk a little bit about that. But when I read it, I really wasn't too surprised because I think it's been well documented that Chase has been the source of a lot of behind-the-scenes drama, not only involving Dan Harmon, but with the rest of the cast members. And while I think some of those elements have been blown out of proportion by the internet, it's been clear for a while now that he hasn't been happy while being a part of the community cast, and he's somewhat threatened leaving the show in the past, and now he finally just decided to push forward with cutting ties with the show. How it's going to affect it creatively, I think that's a big question mark, but like I'd said, sources are saying that there was only like 2 episodes left to shoot, and apparently he's in the season finale, so I don't know how they're going to write him out of the show, because they really can't kill him because he's in that last episode. But I do think that if somehow Community comes back for a 5th season, I don't necessarily think his presence will be missed, because his character, Pierce Hawthorne, had a limited shelf life to begin with, and he started to be very broad and cartoonish, which you could say about all the characters on the show, but I think he was by far the weakest of the bunch. So I don't think he'll necessarily be missed. I'm sure Pierce and Chevy Chase have their fans who will be affected more than others by his leaving, but, you know, it is what it is. I'm not necessarily going to cry over it, and it's not going to stop me from watching Community. So we'll have to see how this new season progresses. And the reason why I said we'll talk about it coming back or a series finale is there are some people out there on the internet who are reading way too much into this. And they're thinking that if Sony's going to let Chevy Chase go without having him fulfill his 2-episode commitment that he has left, that's a sign that Community is somehow going to get another season. And that's a stretch, because I guess their logic is, why make this type of move unless you're going to be keeping Community around for much longer? And again, I don't quite see that happening. I think that's a pipe dream in a lot of ways. But I have to admit there's some logic behind that, especially since season 4 will put it at 84 episodes, give or take. So Sony's proven in the past that they're willing to do pretty much anything to keep their shows going for syndication purposes. So taking out a Chevy Chase-sized contract from the budget could make it cheaper, which could, I guess, convince Sony to essentially pay NBC to put it on the air, which I wouldn't put by them. So there's an outside shot that this could be good news for the show in terms of a prolonged life, but I'm not going to hold my breath because you know, we'll have to see how many viewers come back, but it's not going to look good. And I'm not confident that it's going to do well enough to warrant another season. But you never know.
This news I'm excited about. So earlier this month or so, news broke that Boy Meets World, the family show, is getting a spinoff, like a modern tale, reimagining, I don't know, sequel, where Corey and Topanga now have a 13-year-old daughter, and it's going to be called Girl Meets World, at least right now anyway, who knows. But so as of today, the original stars, Ben Savage and Danielle Fishel, Corey and Topanga, have signed on to film it, to be come back for the pilot at least anyway, you know, hopefully it gets picked up and so on and so forth, but it's pretty solid signs that the show has at least, you know, people's support. What are your thoughts on the Girl Meets World show that could potentially happen?
I mean, this was pretty much a no-brainer because the show doesn't exist without these two actors, since it really is about their daughter. And like I said when the news first broke, I'll be checking in more out of curiosity's sake than anything, but Corey and Topanga were not the draws for me in those last couple of seasons of Boy Meets World, especially Corey. I mean, Ben Savage took that character in a very slapsticky direction that I really didn't care for. I was always in love with Topanga, though, so the fact that Danielle Fischel's coming back will be maybe some motivation for me to check it out and keep with it longer than I might have originally. But yeah, I mean, the show doesn't go anywhere without these two actors. So good for Disney, good for these two, and you know, because I really haven't seen them do much since that show ended. You know, I've seen Ben Savage pop up here and there in guest stints, and I think she was doing a Stoop-like show for Fashion Network or something like that. So they'll probably enjoy getting a paycheck that's pretty solid. But I also kind of wonder how they'll feel about being typecast for the rest of their lives. Apparently it wasn't, you know, too bad for them because they're willing to reprise their roles. But, you know, we've all known how these types of characters can pigeonhole actors, and sometimes there's good things that come along with it, like James Vanderbeek on Apartment 23, and sometimes it can be a train wreck, so that'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, you know, like you said, they haven't really been in all that much since the show went off the air about a decade or so ago. So, I mean, I wasn't surprised that they would choose to sign up, you know, for it. It's it could revitalize their careers. Like, they're obviously back in the news now. People are talking about them. Whereas, like, a week ago, nobody, or I guess before the original news story broke, nobody was really thinking about Danielle Fishel, like, at all. I mean, I'm excited to check it out when it comes out, when it comes on, if it comes on. I hope Ryder Strong, the guy who played the best friend, I hope he comes back. Because he was my favorite of the show when it was on, like, TGIF. So that'd be cool. I'll wait for that news to break.
Yeah, I do think that would probably be the missing piece that would really get me excited for it. Because a big draw of that show was the friendship between Corey and Sean. And it'll be interesting to see how that progressed and if they're still friends or if they're still as close as they used to be. And I think that's just something that would be able to resonate with people our age who might have grown apart from some of their childhood friends, and that could be interesting. Even though they ended up going to college together and stuff like that, which is obviously they're going to do that, so maybe they're just never left each other's side, so maybe it's not going to be that interesting. But having those three back is important, because it's like, you know, Boy Meets World in a sequel without those three is like Harry Potter without the trio. So you need all three of them back.
They have to bring back some of the other people. Maybe, if not as regulars, just, you know, like pop in like on occasion. Because then I think people our age will really care and like be like supportive of it.
True. And my biggest question is, I wonder if Mr. Feeny is going to show up. Because I think he's probably going to somehow be incorporated. He's probably going to be like the principal of her school or something like that, because he just follows these characters no matter where they end up in life. So
I could definitely see him principal. I mean, you know, it's been a while, promotions and whatnot, so we'll see. And then the last bit of news, the BBC series Sherlock has been delayed potentially until 2014, which is kind of a sizable delay. What are your thoughts on this, since I know you watch the show and like it a lot?
Yeah, as a big Sherlock fan, I was a little bummed to read that there's going to be a delay for Series 3. I can't necessarily get too up in arms, though, because the two stars, Benedict Cumberbatch and Martin Freeman, are already in pretty big demand, and once The Hobbit breaks, I can see that being even higher, because they're both a part of it. Obviously, Martin Freeman is Bilbo, and Benedict Cumberbatch, is voicing Smaug. So their stock is definitely rising, and people want to get in on the ground floor as they become bigger and bigger stars. So I can see their schedules getting jam-packed, which obviously means that something has to give, and if that means Sherlock, so be it. I'm just happy we're getting a third series, and I'll wait for however long BBC and PBS want me to, because I'll definitely be checking back in. And sure, it's a little bit longer than I'd like, but I'm by no means mad at this development. I'm just a little bit irked, but I'll get over it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very good reason it's going to be delayed, especially like you said, Martin Freeman's going to be pretty busy with The Hobbit and such, which I'm excited for. Side note. So,
yeah, and then also I forgot that Cumberbatch is in Star Trek too. So, I mean, you have two major motion pictures with these two people involved, and like I said, that's only going to be good things for them, and unfortunately that means Sherlock gets pushed back a couple of months, so.
So yeah, I guess that wraps up all the news so far for this week. So what I've been watching, the biggest thing that I want to talk about anyway is Bob's Burgers. And I feel like the show just doesn't get enough love, like, from anyone. You know, it's on Sunday, Animation Domination, which is no longer this big, like, cultural touchstone that it, like, used to be when Family Guy was big, when The Simpsons was still relevant. I mean, lumped in there with all of these shows that I don't particularly like anymore is Bob's Burgers, which is new. It's relatively new compared to the others, and I think it's just, like, it's still really hitting its stride. And so this past week, the episode was where their, like, peer decides to have this attraction to bring more tourists, and they buy this old mechanical shark from this movie that was filmed there like 20 years ago. And so they buy this old decrepit mechanical shark trying to bring in the tourists. And of course the Belcher kids get into some hijinks and accidentally like knock the shark down while it's on. So it's just like flailing and flopping about on the pier. And then it starts coming towards the town and towards the restaurant. And it's like the whole town kind of like tries to band together to stop this menace. And it was just like consistently funny, and everything kind of tied back to Jaws. Cause you know, obviously the giant shark on the loose attacking the small town, and they had like some really small homages and funny moments. And then they had, you know, the obvious knowing stuff. Like there's a moment where the shark somehow ends up, they like bury it because they think that's going to work in terms of stopping it from destroying everything, but then it just kind of like wiggles its way under Bob's Burgers restaurant, and it's like in the basement, and it starts like tearing down the whole like foundation of it, I guess, and they're in there, and everything is falling apart, and they're like, we're going to need a bigger restaurant. And it's, you know, it's like the most obvious joke you can make when you're doing a Jaws thing. But it was so funny, and like every single beat with the shark and the Belcher family, just really, it really hit home, and it was so hilarious. And I really wish more people were watching it, because like I do feel like it's overshadowed by the lackluster shows around it. But it's a great episode and a good show. So everybody, go watch it. It's on Hulu, and it might be up until like next week, you know, like 8 days later. But whenever it goes online, check it out. It's hilarious. Best episode of Bob's Burgers, like probably since season one, with the art walk. Another great episode. So yeah, that's what I want to talk about.
Wow, that's some high praise. because yeah, I'm a big fan of Bob's Burgers as well. I unfortunately didn't see this episode. Which is odd because I try to keep up with it as much as possible, but for some reason it just slipped through the cracks. But I'm definitely going to check it out as soon as I can because, like you said, it's a show that deserves a little bit more love than it's been getting.
Yeah, no, it's great. Seriously, everybody, go watch it. You don't have to watch the show. Like it's one of those series where you don't need to know the backstory at all. You can just catch any episode at random. So if you've never watched Bob's Burgers, just watch this one. And if you don't like it, then I don't get you. but yeah, so what have you been watching this past week?
There are two shows I quickly want to talk about. The first one is Raising Hope. And the reason why I wanted to give it a little bit of love is because this past episode entitled Candy Wars was probably one of the better episodes of Raising Hope in a while. Technically, it was their Thanksgiving episode, but it somehow morphed into this oddball homage to gangster movies. And the reason why it was taking that route is because the Chance family got into a candy war with this other family by selling fundraiser candy. And the winner of the contest, the kid, would get to be on this Thanksgiving Day float. And it was a big deal in their little town. And so the backstory behind it is in order for Jimmy to win when he was a kid, Mama made her special chocolate recipe, which was pretty much like crack. It was pretty much a drug. And so people would get addicted to it and would buy it, and that's how they ended up winning the contest the first time around. And they wanted Hope to win as well, so they went back to their ways and got back to the cooking that they did in the past. And so you got a lot of funny references to things like The Godfather and Scarface and Breaking Bad. And I'm usually not a fan of reference humor because I think it's kind of lazy sometimes, but this was an example of it just really working well and clicking on all cylinders. And so I really did enjoy this episode. Probably, like I said, one of their best to date. And I've noticed that throughout the last couple of weeks that Raising Hope has really become one of Fox's more solid and dependable comedies. Unfortunately, it's not doing as well as I'd like. I still think, for the most part, it has a pretty decent shot of coming back for another season in spite of its low ratings, but it's a good way to kick off their Tuesday night comedy block. It's just too bad it's not doing well enough to give Ben and Kate a little bit of a boost. So it's by no means setting the world on fire, and it's very clear at this point that New Girl is going to be the name and the face of that comedy brand that is on Fox. But Raising Hope is, like I said, the little engine that keeps on going, and I'm really happy with it, and I take any chance that I can to promote it and say good things about it. And much like you said with Bob's Burgers, if you haven't checked out Raising Hope, this is probably a good episode to check out regardless, because there's not a lot of backstory you need. You pretty much pick up what you need right off the bat. And if you like gangster movies and mob movies and those types of things, you'll definitely get a kick out of it due to all the references that it makes. And the other show I quickly wanted to talk about was TBS's Wedding Band. I know I mentioned it a few episodes back, but I'm still enjoying the show 3 episodes in. And the last 2 episodes were pretty funny. One took place at a comic book convention, so it had a lot of fun sci-fi jokes and references. But it was also able to work in some heart because the band ended up helping these two down-on-their-luck teenage boys try to fix their girl problems. So it wasn't just crassness. There was some levity and some heart to the episode. And like we've talked about before, we're fans of science fiction and comic book genres, and so those references got a good chuckle out of me. The last episode took place at a bachelor party, and it wasn't as good as the previous two, but I still found it pretty entertaining. So the show is by no means a great show at all, but I will say that it's fairly enjoyable to watch. But the big show that I wanted to talk about was the past episode of Glee, which was their superhero-themed episode. And I thought that Dynamic Duets was probably one of their better episodes because I felt like it successfully combined the theme of the week, which was loosely superheroes being a way to mask your insecurities, with the story, and it had some fun musical moments. And I thought it was a good episode for Finn and Blaine and Sam, and those are three characters I really do like. I wasn't as in love with the new love quadrangle between Ryder, Marley, Jake, and Kitty, even though I do think that they're handling it better than the original love quadrangle on this show. But something about that storyline never really clicked for me. So it did take it down a few notches, but overall, I still think it was a pretty solid episode. So did you have a chance to check out the superhero Glee episode?
Yeah, I did, and I agree with you for the most part. I did like the Finn, Blaine, and Sam stuff. I like the song choices. But my biggest problem with these new characters and the new storylines is the Marley and Kitty friendship, frenemyship, whatever it is, where like it's like 90% of the time their Kitty is being terrible and I understand it. And she's like trying to get Marley to be bulimic, which is horrible. And while it's horrible, I understand like that character point, that moment, because she's just a terrible person. She's the new villain. She's Quinn to like the exponential of being terrible. And But then they, like, try to throw in, like, redeemable moments or something. Like, so the entire dynamic duet where they are, you know, they're superhero characters and she, Marley, first tries to be Wallflower and then all of a sudden Kitty does a 180 and is all like, what, you're amazing. You should be woman fierce and don't let anybody tell you otherwise. Like, that moment was just so jarringly, like, out of place and out of, like, line with all of their interactions before that, that it just really bothered me. And it's like, okay, this doesn't make any sense. Whereas, like, okay, yes, it's Glee, and they have these moments and these characters that they just decide they want to do it regardless of who it is and if it makes sense for them. But, like, that just seemed, like, so against everything else. Especially given, like, how horrible Kitty has been to Marley the entire time, for all of a sudden for them to do this duet where she's actually being nice and trying to build her up after tearing her down, like, horrendously. Like, it just was so mishandled and, like, totally took me out of the episode entirely. And I just don't understand the Kitty-Marley dynamic.
Really? Because that's an interesting take, because I never for once thought Kitty was being nice. Like, I thought it was very clear from the get-go, even in that scene that you're talking about, that she wasn't being sincere at all. Like, she was just trying to get Marley out there to fail, and so she just has another reason to push her down. And
I feel like if she was getting, like, I could understand that if, like, she made her fail in the performance at all, but, like, it just seemed like, oh, you're great, let's be friends, and then they have this great performance and this great, like, chemistry, singing, like, and bouncing off each other and dancing and everything, and then they go right, I don't know, it just didn't add up, it didn't mesh at all for me, because if it had been, like, if it had felt more like she was being completely fake and was setting her up to fail, in that moment, then I think I would have bought it more. But for that one dynamic duo performance up until the last one with where they do fun and they're, like, pretending to be chummy, and then she turns around and does that, like, ugh face that Marley can't see, like, up until then it kind of seemed like friendship. And so I wish she had been mean in the dynamic duo performance, because then I would understand that character more and, like, how she was relating.
I mean, I kind of see where you're coming from and what you're saying, but I guess I just, for me, she never dropped the act. Like, she just added an extra layer to it where she's trying to befriend Marley just so her fall will be even more devastating, because we all know that's coming. We all know that Kitty's going to turn on Marley eventually, and maybe what they're doing is they're trying to make her, or Kitty's trying to make Marley believe that they truly are friends, so that way when she betrays her and stabs her in the back, it's going to be even harder on her. I mean, I think that's one way you can justify that scene playing the way it did to some people, but I try to justify every scene almost of Glee to people who it doesn't quite make sense to them. I mean, I can kind of see that. But yeah, I mean, it's just interesting how different people watch TV in different ways, because I never bought her act. Like, I always knew that the things she was saying in the bathroom were completely fake, and which I think made those final scenes work a little bit better for me, because it all backfired in Kitty's face, because we've been seeing her be mean to Marley and manipulating her to make her feel more insecure. And what does Marley do when Ryder breaks off their date? She goes to Jake and says, we're going out on Friday night, to kind of stick it to Kitty, even though she didn't do it on purpose. But that look that Kitty had on her face when Marley's confidence was actually there, in spite of everything she tried to do to break her down, I think that was an okay moment that landed for me. But maybe that's because I was waiting for her comeuppance because of everything she'd been doing up until that point.
I think I like your reading better. I think I want to choose. Like, I didn't read it that way, but I think I'm going to choose to read it your way, because I do like that ending better, where she gets it blown up in her face.
Yeah, but then I do give this show way too much credit, so. But I'm glad to hear that you're at least being able to listen to what I'm saying as opposed to other people who just write the show off no matter what.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm still with the show. I'm still watching it. I still enjoy, like, most of it, I guess. I know, such words of praise. But no, like, I definitely know a lot of people who've given up on the show. Even this season, people who lasted through season one and two, lasted through all of it up until now. But, like, I guess they just haven't been able to latch onto the new characters, haven't been invested in any of the storylines this season. So I'm not turned off completely just yet.
See, and that's weird, too, because I actually think that season four has been pretty good. Like, I think it's up there with season one so far. And I can kind of see why people wouldn't be so warm to the new characters. And it does kind of irk me that they're, at this point, still too similar to the original cast members and the original characters. But I do think that they're giving them different shades and they are making them their own people. But after season two and some of season three, like, if you can last that long and then give up on a season where it's actually rebounded in some ways, at least in my opinion, that's a little bit weird. But
well, I think also because of the new characters and because, you know, they're slowly weeding out the old characters and letting the new characters take a bigger chunk. Like, this is kind of a good jumping out point, you know, like, it's like, okay, I saw how Rachel's story went. I saw how Santana's story went. And, you know, like, so it's like, okay, that was complete arc for the most part. So, like, it's kind of easy to just leave, especially if you don't care about the new characters that much.
Yeah, that's a good point. Maybe it's because I actually do care about them, because I've realized over the last couple of episodes that I don't miss New York at all. Like, I don't care about Rachel and Kurt and their stories. And I find that every time an episode stays in Lima and focuses just on the Glee Club and the characters that are in that part of the country, I'm way more entertained than when we go to New York and have to deal with Rachel and Kurt moping over their breakups and stuff like that. So, I mean, I can see if someone's been so emotionally invested in the old characters not caring, and like you said, it is a logical time to cut the cord. But in some ways, those people are denying their ability to see the show in a new light and maybe have some fresher legs. But, you know, I can't necessarily fault people for leaving the show now, even though I don't understand it 100%, because of the fact that Santana is no longer around as much as she was, or Quinn or Puck and things like that. But I do think that the new characters deserve their fair shot, and I do think, even though that, like I'd said, they may resemble the old ones a little bit too much, I'm excited to see them develop and see where they go. And just from a storytelling and a structure standpoint, it's so much better than it used to be that's what's kind of more baffling than anything. So, but to each their own, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree with you that, like, storytelling-wise, writing-wise, this is a stronger season than, like, season two, for example. So, I mean, it's improving. I do wish I cared more about the new characters and they give them more, like, defining characteristics, so they're not just, you know, like, Quinn 2.0, mm-hmm. Puck 2.0.
Fair enough.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, so that pretty much wraps up what we've been watching. What are you looking forward to this week?
This Tuesday, the second part of Season 5 of Leverage will be premiering. And so far, I will say that Season 5 has not been one of Leverage's strongest outings, but it's still one of my favorite shows on TV today, so I'm definitely going to be checking into that. And quick plug, I am recapping Leverage for thetelevixen.com, so any listeners out there who want to read my thoughts on episodes can head on over there and check them out. Let me know what you think. Leave comments. Any kind of feedback would be nice. but yeah, definitely excited for Leverage to come back.
Cool. I am looking forward to the mid-season finale of The Walking Dead.
Oh, me too.
Yeah. that is going to be pretty epic, it seems like. Everything's been leading up to this big battle between the prison and the governor's town, and So that is all going to happen next week, and I'm very excited to see how it shakes out.
Yeah, yeah, The Walking Dead's proven that it's good at beginnings and endings, because last season, one of its highlights was the mid-season finale with the Barn Massacre, and that was a good moment because it revitalized the show. Part of me is wondering, though, with this current mid-season finale, how it's going to play after the fact. Because like you said, it's all been building up to this moment, and I was a little bit surprised that they're going to hit Woodbury so soon, because where do you go from here?
Yeah, no, that's very true. It's just, it's funny because I feel like last season it was the opposite, where we were like, oh my God, get to it already. Just yeah. Get to the part where they're at the bar and nobody cares. Whereas like now it's like, oh shoot, the battle's happening already, but we like don't know enough about the town. We don't know enough about Michonne yet. And so it's funny how that played out. Whereas like last season it dragged. And this season's, like, every episode's just been hitting major plot points, major developments, major action. And so now the mid-season finale's here, and we're like, what? No. What's going to happen after? Because everything's been going so well in terms of, like, camp beats, story beats. So it's been a great season so far.
Yeah, I'm confident that they have it all figured out, but, yeah, I'm still somewhat hesitant because of the history that the show has. And I just hope that they can keep that momentum going, because it'd be a shame for them to do all this work and get all this goodwill back and then have a good mid-season finale and then it just flounder from there. And again, maybe I'm just being paranoid, and maybe it will, maybe the second half of season 3 will be just as good, but I kind of wanted this to be prolonged a little bit longer. So we'll see what they do from here.
Yeah. I'm excited to see what happens in the finale. And like you said, afterwards, because I really don't know what's going to happen. I didn't read the comics, not to be spoiled on like the comic book storylines, because I want to see how the TV show handles things.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
But I guess that wraps up the show. You can follow me on Twitter at Crystal_Bailey and at Screen Invasion.
And you can follow me on Twitter at Papa's Two Cents. And as always, don't forget to stream the Small Screen Podcast over on Stitcher.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks.